Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Folks, if you haven't seen The Man to My Right, he is, because it's been 169 episodes since he was last. I don't want to say on. That he was featured, because episode 100 was a lot of audio clips. That was back in the day when I didn't care about recording all this stuff. And now you get to see this man's wonderful face. It is none other than the great state of Washington's best representative, than Alex Larson. How are you, my friend? And a very belated Merry Christmas to you as well, as we record the night after Christmas.
Hey, happy belated Merry Christmas to you, to everybody. I'm doing well. Overall, can't complain with the sports teams, Huskies especially. This has been a dream come true year. Seahawks, I mean, they're getting everything done that they need to get done, essentially, but we'll worry about them later. Yeah, happy to be here, brother.
So let's just jump right into the Huskies, you know, attack it like a dog on a bone, because look, it's been a while building up. I know, like, I remember the last time we talked vividly, because you're the one who opened my eyes to the Pac-12. And the redheaded stepchildness. And now, obviously, the conference is dissolving. Some teams are going independent with a Mountain West feel to them. Some teams are going Big 12. You guys, along with Oregon, USC, and UCLA, are all going to the Big 10. But I can say this is probably the best year of Pac-12 football we have gotten, because you saw from an early jump point that there was at least, I would say, five good teams from the gate, and then a sixth that came along. Just for context, the five good ones were you guys, Oregon, USC, UCLA, Utah, and then Arizona has been quite the nice surprise this year.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate what has gone on with the Pac-12 and just the demise of it all. And seriously, that's been the joke. Just this whole part of the United States is, of course, the one year that the Pac-12 is giving us everything. It's its final year. It's bogus. I'm very old school when it comes to college football. I'm not a big fan of what's going on with a lot of the NIL deals and a lot of the transfer portal stuff. But while we still have everything as we do right now,
yeah,
throwing all that aside for a moment, Pac-12 was great this year. And we definitely saw Oregon whoop everybody's butt. USC, I mean, they fizzled out a little there towards the end, but still a dominant team. Yeah, we especially just, oh my gosh, first time ever that I've ever seen a 13-0 Huskies team. I mean, 12-0 was back in 91, so we have done some great things. Yeah, Utah is always dangerous. Arizona, good Lord, yeah, they came out of nowhere for sure. And everyone else, you know, Colorado, it's unfortunate. Again, they're not going to be a part of the Pac-12, but having Deion come up was really big. Our little brother, Wazoo, they started off hot, and then yeah, they definitely fizzled out. So really good teams, though, for the final year. Just really unfortunate how this all had to go down. Just the big dollar talks, and the big dollar talked, and there you go.
And Oregon State was the other team as well that really kind of came out of its shell this year as well. I believe they were a 9 or a 10-win team. The only thing I remember about the game they played you guys in was that it was just pouring rain and it was miserable weather conditions. Like, what a late November in the Pacific Northwest would be. But no, like, I get – so I'm a little bit different. So I get the NIL stuff from a perspective of the players making their own money. I'm not a fan of the transfer portal, of how it's becoming like free agency, what we see in the NFL. I don't even want to say NFL, what it's like in the NBA, where when guys just don't like the situation, they're going to force their hand out and go to somewhere where they think is a better hand. Like, for example, Dylan Gabriel jumping from Oklahoma to go up to Oregon next year, and among other players, how a lot of guys that Deion's basically telling to, this is my podcast because I could say this, but he's telling a lot of the players to fuck off if you don't want to be a part of my program, and I'm going to bring in the guys that I want. So I don't like it from that perspective. And then two, with the Pac-12 argument, how it's, look, we went over it, and even adding in teams too, like Wazoo and Oregon State, who now I think can be very competitive in the Mountain West next year, because the Mountain West, I think besides like Fresno State and a couple other teams, there's nothing really to like smile at. Like, no offense to the Mountain West, but like we all know that it goes like you have the Power Fives and then the Mountain West and the American are like right there where the competition's good, but you got some legit teams coming in with true ballers on them. So we'll wait to see what happens. But with your team overall, more than anything, it's really been, I know Michael Penix is the great quarterback, but I think what we've seen from Kalen DeBoer bringing in a culture, because we've seen that now in the NFL with one team in particular that I want to talk about, but in college, you need that culture building mindset to come in, to be positive. And you know what? Hey, bring in the guys and know that it's going to take a couple of years. But once you get there, it feels pretty good. And I can tell right now, when you do this on Twitter all the time, and when you're doing that with me right now, it's got to feel pretty good, no?
This has been, like I said earlier, this has been a dream come true season. I got to, you know, strap my stuff. I was a UW graduate from 2018, sat in the student section for a couple years. And 2016 was cool. Yeah, we lost the Bama in the college football playoff. But this right now is everything and more. And let me tell you something about Kalen DeBoer. I came prepared with some notes.
Oh, here. I love this.
This guy knows how to win, Griff. This guy knows how to win. At Sioux Falls, from 2005 to 2009, the dude went 67-3. When he was at Fresno State, we had the COVID year in there, but when he was at Fresno State, 12-6. At UW, so far, he's 24-2. You do that math correctly, he is 103-11 as a head coach. The dude knows how to win. This is only his second year going into his third, so we're going to see how the recruiting factor comes into play. And yes, that transfer portal, we already have Will Rogers coming in next year to replace Penix. Of course, I'm sure there'll be some competition there. DeBoer just knows how to win. This is a team with so many guys who decided to come back. Roma Dunze could have been gone. Jalen McMillan could have been gone. Michael Penix could have said, I'm out of here, I'm good enough. They have so many guys, sixth-year seniors, back for one reason, to win the whole dang thing. And so far they're on par for the course.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but Rome's a player that so far in my pre-draft analysis that has really impressed me. And for you knowing my quarterback situation right now, Michael Penix Jr. is a guy that's on my very short list. Him and Daniels, of who I really want the Patriots to target. So I'm very excited to watch. Like, the Daniels, I've seen what I needed to see. But, like, with Penix, I'm very excited to watch him go up against a Texas team. Because, in all honesty, I'm still in debating. Like, the first game we'll get into, I think I already know who's going to win. I've said this from jump. But with your game, I don't know which way to go. Because you have two electric offenses going up against each other in Texas and Washington that, honestly, I think this is one of those games where it's going to come down to either the last play of the game, who's got the ball last, or the turnover battle, and just whatever quarterback, you know, slips up a bit, whether it's Quinn Ewers, whether it's Michael Penix. But so far, what we've seen that, and especially too, in a game like the Pac-12 championship, Michael Penix Jr., when the lights shine brightest, he performs. We haven't seen that from Ewers yet this year, as Texas did lose to Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry game. But we've seen Michael Penix in that championship spotlight. Now, obviously, Texas won the Big 12, but they beat Oklahoma State, which it's not the same as beating. I'm going to do this because you're a good buddy who beat Oregon, but I'm making the O a zero because I know that's what you guys love to do. See, I come prepared. I know my Washington facts. I almost called you Wazoo for a second. Whoops, that went really bad. But you know what I mean? This, like, it's going to be fireworks in New Orleans next Monday night.
Oh, it is. It is. And the Huskies love being the underdog. Every time we've been underdogs this year, which hasn't been a lot, but we always come prepared. We were underdogs against Oregon State. We were mammoth underdogs against Oregon in that Pac-12 championship. Nobody gave us a chance.
I didn't say publicly, but I love the plus 10. I love the plus 10.
Yeah, yeah. I was telling a lot of people, do the plus 10. Bet UW. And, you know, I just think that this is going to come down to whoever has the ball last. Our defense is so wishy-washy. There have been times this year where the defense has showed up, look at the Arizona State game. Yes, I know it's Arizona State. Huskies won that game 15-7. I believe Penix was sick. We had some guys. There was a flu bug going around the locker room. And Mish Powell drives it all the way back for a pick six. Defense can show up when it wants to. Now look at the USC game. That game was a barn burner, 52-42. Huskies prevailed.
Make Caleb Williams cry.
Yeah. Boo-hoo, Caleb. Sorry, buddy. Yeah. I kind of felt bad for him for a second, but I was too jacked up on juice to really care. Oregon, yeah, there's a reason why you Duck fans go like this. That's how many national championships you have. And have fun pumping your own gas, too. No, you can't do that. Sorry. So this game is going to be a shootout, and it's really going to come down to the line of scrimmage. Everything I've heard from this game is our O-line and their D-line. Because our O-line can protect Penix like nobody's business. Penix rarely gets sacked, and there's a reason for that. Our O-line has just been dominant. Texas's D-line and their O-line, both sides of the ball. Texas has an incredible, extraordinary O-line and D-line. Now, our D-line, remember Latuli Nasunoa, and on the edge, we got Braylon Trice and Zion Tulafatui, ZTF for short. Totally probably botched that. Sorry, ZTF. Just say ZTF. It makes it easier. Our D-line, it can show up. Offensive line has always been there. It's going to come down to that battle in the trenches. That's what it's going to come down to. And I totally think whoever has the ball last. As much as I want to say my bias is going to say Huskies got this, Texas is here for a reason. And Husky fans watching this, don't sit there and say, well, we beat them in the Alamo Bowl last year. That was last year. This is this year for a meaningful game, not just a watered-down Alamo Bowl.
Like the First Responders Bowl that I got on in the background featuring Texas State and Rice, just because I like to have sports on while I do this. No, I completely agree with you, because when you have the dogs and then you have the horns, it's – and also, to the other thing I'm thrilled by as well, because I know Texas is good this as well, and there's a player on your team, his name is slipping me, but the defensive backs against these receivers as well is going to be a battle to watch, because we know both sides of the ball, there's a lot of explosive weapons on the offense. Like Rome, what's his last name again? I just want to get to connect.
Odunze.
Rome Odunze, probably going to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft this upcoming spring. You have other, like, I believe it's number one on Washington. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know he's been making a couple big plays throughout the year for you guys. So
Jabbar Muhammad, I think.
That's it, Jabbar Muhammad. So, like, guys like that are going to be true X factors in this game. As much as I love a good trenches battle, and I feel like that's something that's very underrated and underappreciated in football, the fact that this game could be won, too, just by a DB getting their footing off by half a second, or just, like, you miss the receiver by half a step, and then it's just Penix with a bomb, and then Rome's gone, or same thing with Ewers, gets a bomb to one of his receivers, they're gone. It's going to be that battle, too, to where fans of either team, it's not about who's first to crack. It's about who's last standing. This is because I know you're a big wrestling guy too. Shout out Edge is the best. This is a last man standing match. There's a last man standing match of football games, that's what this is. That's literally what this is. And the line right now, I really like you guys at +4.5, especially after your underdog speech. But 63.5. I know everyone's like, oh, it's too much. No, you take it. You take 63.5, and you just wait for the points to roll in. But as for who's going to win, so I'm going to say this to you, and I don't know if you're going to like it. My heart's saying Washington because I feel like it's the great story, but I think we're just gearing up for Texas to get into the national championship. I just don't know which way to lean. Like, I don't want to – like, I'll wait and pick a winner, but that's how I'm feeling about this, you know, where there's, like, that, like, the gut's telling me Texas, but then, like, the heart's telling me Washington. And I feel like at the end of the day – for as much as I think Texas can win this, I think you just gotta go. You gotta go with the story of the Huskies and what they've been able to do. Because look, Texas for years has been, and I know too, there's a very interesting rematch factor if it was Alabama versus Texas, because you have Apprentice going up against Nick Saban, but a guy like Kalen DeBoer against either school from the Rose Bowl, it's all that stuff. And you've pretty much swayed me now to where I'm gonna say this. I wouldn't be shocked if either school were to win, but I think I gotta lean with you guys. I think I gotta go Huskies in this game here to be in Houston come 13 nights from now.
Well, it sure would have been nice if we could go to the Rose Bowl. Travel would have been much easier going from Seattle to Los Angeles, but we'll play the cards we're dealt. And I think all that's solid. And yeah, that 4.5 number, that's, you know, again, like I said earlier, Huskies were underdogs against Oregon State. Nobody thought, even though I know what you said about plus 10, nobody thought Huskies stood a chance against Oregon. We like the underdog, no pun intended, mindset. And this is going to get Kalen DeBoer. You talk about experience and a half, man. I mean, the schedule that we had, in fact, here, I got the schedule right here. Ooh. Went to USC, Utah, Oregon State, Wazoo, Oregon. That, I mean, Pac-12 had its greatest year. And all the teams that we mentioned about how good the Pac-12 was, every single one of those teams that I just mentioned, we beat them. Wasn't close, but it was close. It wasn't as, you know, explosive in terms of a blowout that it would have liked to be in my eyes, because Oregon got the eye test. Oregon passed the eye test. Well, we still won our games. We took care of business. And it's also funny too, because everyone's so focused on Penix. Everyone's so focused on Odunze and McMillan. Dylan Johnson, our running back, whenever teams are prepped to defend our passing, we'll just hand the ball right to Dylan Johnson, who is a Mississippi State transfer. And he can be a big factor in this game too. That's why I'm curious to see the trenches battle, because if Penix, we are struggling a little bit with those Texas corners, or our guys are having an off night, which hard to say, feed the ball to DJ and we'll see what happens there. I'm going to be biased. I think we're going to win this game, but I am trying to take my bias out of it. I really, really think that these guys just have it so down and ready to go. I could see 38-35, you know, one of those kind of scores. I think it's going to be really stinking close, but boy, oh boy, no matter what happens, everybody, I have had so much fun watching this team. I even just got done telling my mom, look, if we lose this game, you just have to let me have my stomp my feet moment, just maybe punch the couch for a second. But I'm not going to be as pissed as I normally would. I got to live through a 13-0 season, something we Husky fans haven't seen since 91 when they went 12-0. Proud as heck of my boys. So let's go, Texas. Bring it on. I got 38-35. You dumb.
Because that's the thing that I love, is the fact that, like, with fandom comes that sense of pride where it's, we've gotten this far. If we win, it's great. But if we lose, it's bad. Because I always say this too with the NFL, and I know this is kind of the spoiled kid talking here, but I've always said that losing a conference championship game hurts more than losing losing the Super Bowl. And everyone might talk, oh, you're crazy, all this stuff. But think about it. The Super Bowl, your team made it to the Super Bowl. It still stings. It still sucks. I know, I'm not going to say unfortunately from my end, but I know you know how losing the Super Bowl feels, and I know my fair share of them too. But with this game, though, with college football, it's different because you've already won your conference. You're at the top of the mountaintop. You guys are the top.
You hear that, Oregon? Sorry to interrupt you, Griffin. You hear that, Oregon? We beat you not once, but twice, baby.
And that's the thing, too, with that, where it's you beat your biggest rivals twice. You had a season. Because, look, there's certain schools where it's what you do is expected. Georgia, it's expected. Alabama, it's expected. Michigan now, it's expected. Ohio State, to a degree, it's expected. I would even say Oklahoma and Texas, it's expected to be at the top pinnacle. Meanwhile, for the teams in the Pac-12, it's always been like a revolving cycle the last few years. Like, Utah's really come on. I really like what Kyle Whittingham's done there. Obviously, look, I don't think that Cam, I'm blanking on the quarterback's name for them. Cam, not Bryson Rising. Barnes. Rising should never play in Pasadena again, because I feel like every time he does, he gets hurt. And that's not a knock. It's just a weird coincidence. In the last two Rose Bowls, he's gotten hurt. But Utah's built such a solid program. USC, they brought in Lincoln Riley with a solid program. Chip Kelly. I know that, look, Oregon's a big rival, but what Dan Lanning has done there has been remarkable. Dan Lanning's built a true program. I know. Jed Fisher, shout out for me and the Patriots. Same thing, too, with him. And then Kalen DeBoer in Washington. So you have all these teams now that when they go to the Big 12, and when you guys go to the Pac, when you guys go from the Pac-12 to the Big 10, it's not going to be a feeding to the wolves like what I think we may see from an Oklahoma or Texas going to the SEC, where, hey, guys, you got to play defense. It's you have the competition there. Just be, look, you're going to be competing with the teams you already know. And then two teams like Michigan and Ohio State, you guys can go toe-to-toe with. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see the Big Ten as a dynamic next year, considering, too, you have other programs like a Northwestern who went through a lot of stuff last year, and they had a decent season this year. They got a bowl. Like, in my opinion, I know college football, if you lose more than two games, it's considered a disappointment. But for me, I think if you get to a bowl game, even if you're not like a mid-level program, it's still an accomplishment to get to a bowl, even if you're playing in, and I can't wait to see this one. I think it's Thursday, but the Pop-Tart Bowl, where there's going to be actual Pop-Tarts in the trophy. I popped for that. But do you know what I mean? Do you agree with the whole Big Ten thing where it's like, going back to your teams, all four teams are going to be very competitive with the rest of the Big Ten?
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. There's no doubt about it. Oregon is not going anywhere, despite what I may want and think. They're not going anywhere. USC, that's such a sexy name in college football. USC is not going anywhere. I'm curious what happens with UCLA, because Chip Kelly, he's kind of been on the hot seat. So I think regardless, though, I think they'll be fine. They may be the fourth best team of those four that are going in my book. UW, though, I gotta say, is going to be really interesting next year when Michael Penix and Odunze, maybe McMillan, we're losing a few guys like Thule on defense. We're going to lose some big names. I'm not going to come on here and be all Husky bias and say, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. You want my honest opinion? I can't sit here and promise you that we're going to go undefeated again next year. I could easily see a couple losses on the schedule. Now, this isn't to say that Will Rogers coming in from Mississippi State is going to be bad. He's probably going to be great and put up amazing numbers. I am very curious how it's going to go for us next year, losing Penix, losing some of these guys. And as for the other teams and what you mentioned about how two losses is like a disappointment and that whole spiel. No, there is nothing I loved more than when the Huskies won, what was it, the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl against Southern Mississippi back in, was it 2014, 2015, or whatever it was, when Chris Peterson, we were finally kind of starting to come into our own. If you know that you're going to be a team that's maybe you're rebuilding or you're a year or two away, yeah, man, A, it's more football. I love more football. You're telling me I get to watch my team one more time? Heck yes. And you just kind of feel it. When you win that bowl game, you just feel it like, okay, we got something cooking here. We got something going. But then you got the transfer portal. I know kind of a weird transition, but the transfer portal, the amount of kids that have been transferring as bowl season is happening, this is where I don't agree with the transfer portal. You got these blowout bowl games like Syracuse getting their doors blown off, Eastern Michigan just getting their doors blown off.
We
got
which caused a fist fight.
Yeah, seriously. The Holiday Bowl, Caleb Williams isn't going to be in that one, so that makes me want to pick Louisville over SC for that reason alone. So yeah, the transfer portal, I know, don't get me too started on it. There's pros and cons with everything, but no, absolutely. Next season is going to be very interesting for us and this whole slew of everyone going to different conferences. I'll be curious if Mr. Deion Sanders can keep it up outside the Pac-12. That's next year is going to be interesting for him too.
The Big 12, is losing its top candidates. And you also have basketball schools like starting to play good as well. Like, look, Duke's a good football program now. Kansas is a good football program now. The one thing I want to say about the whole Caleb Williams thing is, if players, and I know Sam Hartman's in this boat as well, which I don't know why my fiance is very attracted to him, and that's another story. But with the guys that are going to be going into the draft, I don't think Jaden Daniels is playing in his bowl game either. I know too, Christian McCaffrey, which I know it's not a popular name for you right now, but when it's draft prep and you know you're good, because like I'd rather see you not play than, do you remember the Orange Bowl 2 years ago when it was Georgia, Michigan, and you could like I could physically tell guys like Aiden Hutchinson were dogging it out there, where they were like Pro Bowl level effort of we don't want to get hurt. Like I'd rather see guys go bucking heads, because the thing with college football is for a lot of these kids, this is the highest level of football they're going to ever play in their careers. Because remember, only 1% of college footballers make it to the pros. So when I see guys out there that, you know what, hey, like I'm watching Rice right now, and there might be for a guy looking at my screens, I don't know any, I'll be honest with you, I don't know Rice football. I don't think, I don't really pay much attention to the American or the Sun Belt Conference. But with a lot of those guys where it's like, this might be it for your football career. So go out there with a bang. Even Washington too, there's probably going to be a handful of guys I probably don't know the names of, to where probably, you know, the next time they step onto the field in New Orleans Monday night, it could be the last time ever for them. So when it comes to these games, you have to respect it, because look, for the guys going to the pros, it's great. But I look it out for the guy, the little man, where it's like, for him, this is going to be the thing he holds on to. Not like the kid who peaked in high school and who goes back and creepily visits. But this is going to be the thing. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like the pro athlete that tore his ACL and now he's living in his hometown still. But the players who, like, they can go on and look back proudly and go, yeah, I played college football. It's like me. Like, I played a couple years of high school football and I didn't do anything with it. But at the same time, too, I can kind of look back and say, yeah, I played high school football. I was a third string defensive tackle, but that's another story for another day. So, yeah. I wanted to look at your schedule quickly. I also wanted to look at UCLA's as well, just because I was curious. So, with you guys next year, like, I look at your schedule, Weber State, Eastern Michigan, and then the Apple Cup is Saturday, September 14th, not on Thanksgiving. That is weird. That's why they put Oregon. You guys close out with Oregon. But I'm looking at your schedule next year, and I'm like looking at it where I'm like, I can see 3-0. Your first real test, I would say, is Michigan, October 5th, and then USC, Penn State, UCLA, and Oregon. So you have that chunk in the middle where I think you guys are pretty solid. And then with UCLA next year, it's Hawaii, Indiana, LSU, Oregon, Penn State, Minnesota, Rutgers, Nebraska, Iowa, you guys, USC, and Fresno State, to where I look at their game schedule too, and I feel like I wouldn't be shocked to see them lose, I don't know, like to Indiana, or they lose to like a Minnesota, who, because Minnesota is very weird. I feel like they're either really good or they're not. That's just me. And that's my 2 cents. I just wanted to add to that. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. Row the boat, Minnesota. Row the boat. Keep that going. Yeah, I honestly, and this is so weird for me, normally I'm all for looking forward to next year, but I've just been so hypnotized by the college football playoff this year. I haven't taken too much of a glance at that schedule. That's 3-0 right out of the gate. I mean, no doubt about it. And yeah, the Apple Cup, now that Wazoo is a part of that Mountain West, that's why it got moved to, what was it, week 3, I think you said? Yeah. And Oregon, since they're in the Big Ten conference, so I kind of like having Oregon as our last game. It's going to be very weird, though. Just based off the teams that you mentioned, though, and again, I just need to see a little bit more from DeBoer with recruiting. This will be his third year next year, and losing so many key pieces. Husky Stadium's a tough place to play, and I'll be back there again. Just renewed my season tickets again, so he'll get a couple more octaves in terms of screaming. But yeah, I can't be unrealistic. I just don't see a 13-0, 12-0 Husky team. I think we may have a nice warm welcome, if you get my gist, with some of these teams in the Big Ten. I mean, Ohio State, great. Michigan, great. But then as you kind of go down that list of the Big Ten, it's like it's those two big boys up top. And then, yeah, you got some Rutgers in there. You know, Iowa. I mean, I know Iowa's defense is insane, but come on, you can't really score.
They can't score.
That's just it. That's just it.
Yeah.
Rutgers, Iowa, you know, Indiana, yeah, maybe. I mean, there are some very, very beatable teams in there that I could see the Huskies taking care of, no problem. But I'm very curious, though, how they handle Texas and if we can make it, how we can handle Michigan and Alabama. I'll tell you this. If we at least make these games close, and of course, if we win, that's a big bonus. But this is going to say a lot for how the rest of the team is going to look next year. Again, no Penix, no Odunze. We're missing some pieces. But if these guys are buying in, they'll play anybody. Yep. And they have the potential to beat anybody from the former Pac-12 or currently in the Big Ten.
That is just it. So, like, I just wanted to focus on that, but I understand you being tunnel vision to Monday night New Orleans. And for all we know, you're either going to see Husky fans on New Orleans. You'll see them hammering Monday night on Bourbon Street. It's just a matter of if it's good or if it's a bad. Moving on, though, to the Rose Bowl, which, look, I'm not sure how much wrestling you watch anymore, but the Rose Bowl is a game that I consider to be college football's WrestleMania. Now, I know there's a national championship, but every time you watch it, it's New Year's Day. The stadium just has an aura to it. Fowler and Herb Street, which I will say this, they are my favorite football commentating duo.
Same.
That's a thing. It's just Fowler's voice, just it hits differently, and Herb Street's knowledge is just impeccable. If you have I'll say this too, cheap plug. If you haven't read his book, Herb Streets, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic biography.
Yeah, I actually have a copy. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. You learn a lot about him. It's like just the whole thing, the aura of it. And this is where I was saying to you where I feel like I know who's going to win, and I've had this winner since Jump. Alabama's going to Houston. I'm sorry, but here's the thing. I know Michigan's a good story, but what I saw from J.J. Like, here's the thing. I have yet to see an impressive show-me-something J.J. McCarthy game. They shelter him. They let Blake Corum do a lot of it. If we know anything about Alabama, you're running into a wall on defense. You're not going to be able just to run the ball all over them, go for 200 yards. If you do that, you did the right thing. And the other thing, too, is, and I want to say this because I want to commend this player. Jalen Milroe has impressed me from Jump, because going into the year, look, you had Tommy Rees coming in from Notre Dame. There's a lot of question marks surrounding him. Jalen Milroe was called a tree because, look, he was a tall, athletic guy, couldn't throw the football. They played Tennessee, I want to say, week 7 or week 8. And that's the game where I look at him and I go, they've got something. Like him, Jermaine Burton's just a speed freak out there. They got one of my favorite names, shout out Kool-Aid McKinstry. Their Cadillac, I believe Cadillac Williams running the, no, Cadillac Williams the coach, but I'm trying to remember the name of the running back, but I'm blanking on it. But so that's my thing. Because with Michigan, and Michigan fans can come at me all they want, I know a handful of them, but if Michigan's going to win this game, you got to let J.J. McCarthy loose. It's like when you're at the dog, it's like being in a dog park and keeping your dog on the leash the entire time. You got to let the dog off the leash and let it go run around the park with other dogs. I'm sorry. That's how I view Michigan. And the fact, too, that Michigan is the favorite in this game, considering what Alabama did. And now I know there's the whole Florida State controversy there, which, look, if it were up to me, I would put Florida State in at the 4. But in all honesty, I don't know how Mike Norvell's squad would have done against Michigan. Meanwhile, you put Michigan and Alabama in there, we're in for 2 electric games. And that's why I'm just saying it. It's going to be roll, tide, roll, because it's like the Patriots for years. You get Nick Saban in these situations, he knows how to win when the lights shine the brightest.
There's a lot of things that you said there that there's just so many nuggets that I just had in my head. So I'll just kind of backtrack a little each one. Florida State, I feel for them. I feel really bad. You go undefeated. I mean, that's the goal. You go undefeated and you get snubbed. Now, Alabama beat Georgia, who hadn't lost the game since Nam. I mean, Georgia just was completely dominating for years. And they still are
in a row.
Exactly. They never lose. So Alabama, that was solid. Kudos. Yes. Florida State, I know this just sounds bad and it's not I wouldn't say it's not professional, but you're going to throw out your backup quarterback and your team was a little banged up there. I mean, that's just maybe you don't know. If hindsight were 2020, I mean, we don't know. I do not think Florida State, without having their quarterback, I just don't think it's good TV. I just don't think it's good TV. As for what you said about the Alabama-Michigan game, well, don't let Michigan fans come at you because they were, you know, they're stealing signs and Jim Harbaugh, a lot of that stuff there. They have no room to talk. They got a little bit of a scandal going on. So don't sleep on Nick Saban. Do not sleep on Nick Saban at all. This is going to be a very interesting game. I still don't even know who I'm going to have as the winner yet. I haven't even thought about that one yet. I am with you, though. I am leaning a little towards Alabama, but it's like, God, Michigan's there for a reason, too. That's a Jim Harbaugh coach team. Again, you take away the sign stealing stuff. That's another topic. But also, another thing on Alabama, though, luck was on their side, though. That Iron Bowl, that miracle against Auburn. I mean, you want to talk about lucky and poor Auburn fans. So, you know, it takes a little bit of luck, just like how, with the Huskies, the Meech Powell runs back a pick 6. I mean, I don't know if we beat Arizona State, and I don't even know if I'm on this podcast talking college football playoffs. So there's a lot of luck thrown in there. And yeah, man, I can't decipher who is going to win this game. It's a Jim Harbaugh coach team against a Nick Saban hungry Alabama team who just knocked off Georgia. I mean, you want to talk about a battle of the trenches game. Wouldn't shock me if this game is a little bit more lower scoring than our game.
That's the thing, too. I also thought TCU and Michigan last year is going to be lower scoring, and I was proven wrong very fast. Roy Dell Williams, by the way, was the running back I was thinking of from Alabama. That's really come out. I know it's a Jim Harbaugh coach team. It's just, like I said, it's the Nick Saban factor. It's the Rose Bowl factor. It's the Michigan, when you look at them, like, I always view Michigan like this. When they beat Ohio State in 21, which actually I'm going to go off on an ADD note, I'm not totally upset with Auburn fans or Alabama in that sense because, look, they had to wait 10 years to get their wishwash back. Let's say Chris Davis and all that stuff. I'm just going to throw the name out there, Chris Davis. But here's the thing with Michigan. 21, when they beat Ohio State, I was like, awesome, good for you guys. You won the Big Ten, you did that. But then we were talking about how Aiden Hutchinson was dogging it, and I feel like that's when they were like, you know what, we'll lose to Georgia. We're okay with it. It's no big deal. And then last year was the year where I was like, okay, this is the year you got to go get it done. Bama's not there. There's no other. I know Georgia was a big dog. I know Ohio State was in there as well. But look, you took care of Ohio State in Columbus. You took care of Iowa in Indianapolis. And then when it mattered most, J.J. McCarthy couldn't get it done in Phoenix. That's where I'd look at this game. Jalen Milroe, like I said, he went into Auburn and won the Iron Bowl to Isaiah Bond on one of the craziest fourth and goals you'll ever see. He went into Atlanta and beat the team. They were David. How rare is that? That Alabama is David. And they slayed Goliath. That's the thing. They went in there and made Carson Beck, who's going to be a great quarterback in the NFL one day. He's got the intangibles. Georgia, too, I feel like Philadelphia Eagles Jr. They have all the tools. And then what does Alabama do? They go in there and they completely shut them down. I know the score's close. And here's the other thing, too, that we've come to learn. Don't fade Nick Saban as an underdog. That's the other big piece to this as well. Whenever Nick Saban is a betting underdog, except for the 21 national championship, not the one they beat Ohio State and the one they lost to Georgia, that's where it comes into play. It comes into play, you know, where experience benefits him. And also, too, it's the fact that if Michigan had beaten Ohio State the way they did in Ann Arbor to win the Big Ten championship instead of just taking care of an Iowa team that – look, Alex, you and I could go out there and play, and we'd probably score points for Iowa. Yeah, exactly. We'd be on there. We can wave. I'm not going to make fun of the wave. I think it's a wonderful tradition they do at that university. But with Michigan, it's like I said, if they're going to win this game, it's not like you guys where it's who comes down to it last. It's can J.J. McCarthy make the big play when it matters most? You have a 3rd and 15 on the Alabama 30. You're down 30-27, or you're down 30-24, and you got to go out there. Show me something, J.J. McCarthy. That's what I'm going to say with this game. It comes down to him. I think it ultimately is going to come down to can J.J. McCarthy win the big one when the lights shine brightest? Because so far, that's his only loss.
Hey, and a fun fact for you, I don't have the exact year, but did you know that the wave was started at the University of Washington?
Ooh. You know the one I'm talking about, the Children's Hospital one, though.
Oh, that way. Oh, see, there's two different waves. Yes, that wave is us. That wave that you're talking about, I do like. I am a big fan of that.
Not the wave that at baseball games I want to kill myself for.
We started that one. Sorry.
Yeah. In football, it's fine. In football, it's fine because everyone's having a fun time. Baseball, it's you. Because here's the difference. Because I know we're both big baseball fans here. You're a Mariners fan. I'm a Jays fan. Ugh. The wave is usually started, at least at Jays games, by some drunk idiot who's just there to think that he's cool and popular, and I'm trying to watch the game, and everyone's going, I'm just like, please stop it. Because then something, and then if you do it, and then you miss something, and then it's like, guys, what the hell? Like, it looks cool for TV, but at the same time, too, it's just, ugh. No, so not that, not woo. It's the wave to the Children's Hospital. I was about to say, like, oh, we can wave. That's why I said it. But at the same time, I held it back just because it is a very nice tradition just to do for the children at the, I don't know what the name of the hospital is, but it's a very beautiful tradition. But yeah, that's going back to my point from before. Show me something, J.J. McCarthy.
No, absolutely. And I don't have as much knowledge and brain power as, I do as my Huskies. But for Alabama and Michigan, J.J. McCarthy, it's going to come down to him. Again, don't fade Nick Saban in terms of him being an underdog. It's just going to be big boy football. That's as much as I can put it right there. It's going to be big boy football.
It's going to be chess, not checkers. It's that. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But I didn't put them in the scorebook, but we actually have like a bunch of interesting, not interesting, but a bunch of good matchups coming up late, like in the next little while. Now there's some that are kind of like, man, like the one I was actually turned it off, the Rice and Texas game, the Texas State game. But like Louisville, USC tomorrow night, North Carolina, West Virginia. Okay. A&M, Oklahoma State. Okay, there's a lot of bad games in here. North Carolina State versus Kansas State, which Kansas State's another school that's looked good recently. Arizona, Oklahoma, and the Alamo Bowl, which if life indicates anything, that could be very well a semifinal preview for next year.
Yeah.
But like when I look at some of these games, like I want to focus on New Year's Day because Oregon versus Liberty is a game I'm interested to see for one factor, and it's does Oregon get up for this? Because obviously Liberty – Conference USA champions, but Oregon's like, it's like the sour taste in your mouth because you lost to Washington in the Pac-12 championship game. So I'm excited to see if they get up for that. And then obviously Iowa versus Tennessee in the Citrus Bowl. Like I like just watching like those random bowl games. Like, cause I always say this too with bowl games, I want to get your opinion. If you're playing before Christmas, that's where it's like you just put the bad schools in. If you're playing after Christmas, that's where it's like, hey, you did something this year.
100%. Yeah, that's how I've always been too. That literally is exactly how I've thought for as long as being a college football fan. Anything after Christmas, that's legit. And now that the college football playoff starting next year is going to go from 4 to 12, that's going to make things a little bit more interesting. Because all these bowl games that we've had for so many years, they're just watered down. You said it best about the Rose Bowl. It is. It's like the WrestleMania of college football. But now it's like the Rose Bowl. If it's not included in the college football playoff, it's just another bowl game. It just, it's there's too many. It's all for money purposes and sponsorship. So I don't want to see bowl games get eliminated because I do, like all of you, big football fan. But if you're not in the top four or next year and from the year on out, the top 12, you're just playing for a trophy and bragging rights. And it's just like, I just hate. Again, I'm very old school in that regard, though, because there's so many teams that do deserve to go to bowl games. You won six games, you won seven games. Okay, good. You know, it's almost like a little participation trophy, but still you got something to play for. But if it's like you said, if you're not playing after Christmas, yeah, good job. Good luck in your bowl game. But everything is just so much better after Christmas. And next year is going to be really fun. So we won't have, 13 and 14 and 15 are going to get talked about like how 5, 6, and 7 are in terms of the college football playoff. So it's going to be really interesting to see when the 12 teams go in next year and how that factors into all of these bowl games. Are we eliminating them? Do some of these other middle tier bowl games become more upper echelon because we have to fit a few more teams in there? I don't know, but it's going to be fun.
So here's my thing on the whole 12 team thing. Four for me, it's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. 12. Oh, this porridge is too cold. 12. Oh, this porridge is too much. 8. This porridge is just right. I feel like if they had done 8 teams, it works out better. I like the format that they're doing. The only thing is, and I know some people are saying, oh, you're going to get some upsets. No, you're not. You're going to get maybe an upset once every, I think, maybe few years. I want to say 5, but I want to be a little fair. Because, like, say, for example, I don't know, if, like, a Texas is playing a Penn State, Texas is going to take care of them, no problem. Because Penn State, what do they struggle with most? Beating big teams. Their two losses this year were Ohio State and Michigan. USC, same thing. Because like USC, they lost to you guys. They lost to who the heck was the other loss? USC. There was one bad one in there.
They lose to Oregon?
They may have. But do you get where I'm coming from? I feel like with the 12 team, because you know what? Just for fun, let's look at the AP 25, top 25. Okay, so say if 5 versus 12 is Alabama, Oklahoma. This is not the playoff 25. This is just the Associated Press one. 6 versus 11, Georgia and Ole Miss. Okay. So the only one I see here is Oregon and Missouri. Like, it could be a fair comp, it could be a fair game, but I feel like with these bowl games, I should say, because I know how they're doing it, where And also I like it for this factor that it's not a bowl game, but it's being played on the better team's home campus. So it's a legitimate home game. That's the factor that I like into it, that, hey, these teams get one more game in their home stadium. So, yeah. And I also, I don't think there's going to be as much political controversy as there is with 5, 6, and 7 as 12, 13, 14, 15 will be. Because I feel like with the 4, it's kind of that whole, like, you have some very deserving teams. Meanwhile, with 13, 14, 15, by that point, you kind of know who's in, who's out. And also, too, you're not going to get March Madness because – the truly good programs are wired differently than the truly good basketball programs. Gonzaga, where they actually know how to beat competition that's at their level. Meanwhile, Gonzaga, I say every year, everyone's like, oh, watch for the Bulldogs win the national championship. And I'm like, they don't know how to beat good teams. They play in a bad conference. And so when they have to face someone legitimately good, chances are they're going to lose. So that's my qualm with the 12-team playoff. It's just that if you had done 8, it would have been the perfect amount to where you can get some teams that fool around and get an upset. Like, say, for example, if it's like a Georgia versus a Penn State or even a Florida State against Penn State, that's a very exciting football matchup. Or even, too, if you get like Oregon and Ohio State going at each other, those are very fun football games that can go either way. But when you get a 5 versus 12 and the 5 is so much better than the 12 – there's going to be some blowout games. There's going to be some games that are just going to be bad, and you're going to have to hold your breath through them for 60 minutes.
Sometimes those games, though, have the potential, like, as they say on College Game Day a lot, like, oh, so-and-so will stick around for the first half of the game. You know, maybe it'll be like a 23-16, 23-13, just some score like that where, it's close. But then you do see that the better team second half adjustments have been made. You know the game's getting close to being over by the end of the third quarter, you know?
Yeah, when 23-16 is 45-6. No, let's do a proper score, 23. 44-6. You snap your fingers and it's like 46-16. You know, where us?
Exactly.
Seven-point deficit becomes a 30-point deficit. And by that point, it's kind of just pack your bags and go home and just finish the game out so no one gets hurt.
You also mentioned, I just have to say, you mentioned Gonzaga. Huskies knocked off Gonzaga a few weeks ago. First time in 18 years we beat Gonzaga. Thank you very much. That is on the other side of this beautiful state of Washington. I don't go over there. So good job, Dogs.
I just wanted to say that just because, like, I know Gonzaga is always that perennial example. And also because with college basketball, like how you get Duke, Kentucky, or schools like that where they don't necessarily always run the table. Like, Kentucky 2 years ago lost to St. Peter's. I just feel like you're not going to see some random Cinderella story come up like how we saw. Let's just give a fun example. Do you remember when Central Florida a few years ago went like 13-0 and then they were like the uncrowned national championship? Yeah. You put that team against Alabama and it's not even a competition that year. I'm sorry. It's not, because certain programs are built NFL ready, which are all the Power Five, including you guys. Like, they're built to be ready for the NFL. Meanwhile, programs like Central Florida, they might send a couple players here and there, or they're players that go play in the USFL or the XFL or the CFL, which, not a bad thing necessarily. That's my other thing I think with covering the league. But certain programs are wired differently in that they have players that are 18 that look like they're 35, and there's a reason for that.
Exactly. Yeah, those matchups could be fun, and they look okay. But yeah, this ain't March Madness, like you said, man. No, they'll keep it close for the first half. And like you said, we'll see an upset, you know, every few years maybe. But yeah, you just know. It's been the top four for many years for a reason. I always just feel bad for 5 and 6. It's just like, what else could you have done? But you know who the top four teams are. And that's why, again, I think Florida State, going back to them, they didn't have their starting quarterback. And if I remember correctly, their backup quarterback wasn't even playing that game. I think that's the team.
Yeah. Ooh, folks, we did lose Alex for a split second there. Oh, there he's back.
We still here? We're good? Okay.
Went dark for a second.
So Florida State, you just didn't have the team that should have been in there due to their quarterback just not being able to start. So
That's just it. That's the $1 million thing with all this.
Griff, did I lose you?
Oh, we're good. You just slipped for a second. But obviously now I want to go back to the NFL, because Week 16 we saw. Look, there was a lot of interesting games. You guys won. My guys won. Alex's video is back on now. But with week 16, I want to talk about one thing in particular, and not even the week as a whole, but I want to talk about your – can you still hear me? Do you hear me? Okay, so guys, we're still trying to figure stuff out on the end of Alex, but
hello, Griff, you there?
The end of me, and oh yes, I am. Yes, sir, I am here. So actually wanted to go into something because I had a question for you about your football team in particular.
Shoot, I'm afraid to leave. What happens if I leave?
I have a brilliant idea. I'm gonna do something right now. It's not ideal, but I've done it before and it works. Okay. So what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna take them off for a second, guys. Vamp, we're having some technical difficulties. It is what it is. But as you guys know by now, and as well, because I have to do this because it's for the brand, it's for the podcast. But whether you're betting on the NFL this weekend, whether you're betting on college football this weekend, you know what you guys can do? You guys can go and scan the promo code QR code underneath me as me and the boys by Down By Two have something going for you. Scan that code, sign up, and they will match your first deposit of up to $400. So whether you are betting on the NFL this weekend, whether you're betting on college football and the college football playoffs, you want to ring in the new year with some cash, hook it up with the friends at Bodog. And we're bringing them back in, guys. Alex is back in. Let's hope we have everything going right. Can you hear me, sir? How are you doing? Ooh. Okay, so what I'm going to do is, I have to do this, unfortunately. I'm going to vamp for a few minutes, okay? I'm going to vamp. There's also some other promo codes, but I'm not sure what they're doing as I... Ooh. Okay, so see, this is how this goes.
Somebody tried calling me and it all screwed up. I am so sorry.
Now we know what happened. See, a little kick out sometimes does a lot of good work. I got to get a good promo in there, though, so it's all good and dandy. If you can hear me now.
Hope you're able to edit that.
Oh, you know what? I don't edit. I go live to tape, even if the best of times, the worst of times, and if you're a Simpsons fan, the blurst of times. So I have a question for you about your football team, your NFL football team.
Oh, please bring it on.
The last couple, I know it's been a bit of a rocky road the last few weeks, but the last... Let's call it last 8 days have been pretty good. Getting the big win on Monday Night Football against the Eagles, going into Tennessee and taking care of the Titans. My question for you is, who is QB1 come September 2024?
Somebody that is not on our roster right now. I would love to say Michael Penix, but I don't think he's going to be there. And I don't even know if we have the good offensive line for him. It's going to be Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, if they're even still there, any one of these rookie quarterbacks, Geno, I like the guy. I do. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with the guy. I don't even know if we're going to win a playoff game with the guy. I have loved the story. I've loved everything about his comeback story that he's brought to the Hawks. And yes, some of you may be thinking, well, don't you want to sit your rookie quarterback and, you know, let Geno do his thing? I know we still have him under contract. Yeah, but this is just where my patience level is at. Having so many years with Russell Wilson. Ah, gosh, I don't know if I can really answer that yet, but I don't think it's anybody that's on this team right now. I'm going to bank on a rookie quarterback.
So here's my thing, and I know this for a fact. The Geno Smith contract was built so there is an out after this season. John Schneider's done a good job with that. He can do the contract. He can rejig it. So you know what? Geno Smith can get cut. Otherwise, I believe it's a $28 million payday that he's owed fully guaranteed. Drew Locke's always been a quarterback I've been skeptical of. He looked really good Monday night against the Philadelphia Eagles when it mattered most. I'm with you in the sense of Geno, where last year the story was great. But by December last year, we started to see... How do you say this? You started to see the trees fall from the leaves. You know, you started to see the true Geno come back to earth, where he was losing some games, like the San Francisco game. It was a Thursday night in Seattle. And then the playoff game, obviously, look, it didn't go your guys' way. I think it was like 45-23 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then this year, too, gets off to a rocky start. with the loss in the loss to the Rams, but then you went to Detroit and took care of the Detroit Lions, a team this year that's pretty proven, which I got to send out my congratulations to them. I was hard on them, but I was only hard on them because there are all these just analysts who like to give foolish takes every year and just fire off hot takes, and it works. They make a lot of money off doing so. But because of all that, where everyone's saying Detroit's going to win the North, they're going to do all this, and I'm like, guys, they haven't done anything yet, and Dan Campbell's built a program to go out there and win. So all my kudos to them. But for you guys, I just think, and especially too, it's the losing streak that occurred during November, like the lost LA, getting your butt whooped by San Francisco twice in a three-week period. But if he had like won like the Dallas game on the Thursday night, which I will say in one of the more better-looking throwback uniforms on the season, and you guys, I was always a fan of those.
Agree.
But that's my thing with the Geno Smith thing, where it's not boyfriend material, but he's a friend zone material, if that makes any sense. I know it's a very weird metaphor, but it's that sense. The way, though, I will say this, if he can stay, is if you get to the playoffs and you win. I know I just sent my kudos out to them, but your defense can hang tough with a lot of these teams. Reek Woolen is a hell of a cornerback. Jamal Adams, that's another situation for another day.
Yikes.
Devin Witherspoon, D-Roy candidate. I don't know if he's going to – I feel like Jalen Carter is probably going to win the award, but Devin Witherspoon is a great draft pick. JSN's been looking really good on the offensive side of the ball. Because that's the thing right now. If you guys can shore up the offensive line, Charles Cross can continue to develop into a proper tackle, and you get some tight end help, because I know you've got Will Dissly, but Will Dissly – and I'm blanking on who the other tight end is, because I know
Noah Fant and Colby Parkinson,
that's right. Because I know there's Colby Parkinson, that's right. There's Noah Fant, too. And I always said this for the Russell Wilson trade. I'm like, I don't know why Denver's getting rid of him. But if you can get, like, you know, a true tight end one to go in there along with Parkinson and Fant, because Fant's a good tight end, but, like, you need, like, you know, that, like, that great tight end that we see. Or even, too, if you want to go draft someone, like, if you're there and Brock Bowers is available, go scoop up Brock Bowers. So if the Seahawks can do that, they can stay competitive, because when I look at your division – I look at it like this. I know they lost, but San Francisco is still a head honcho. I feel like they'll take care of Washington, no problem.
Yep.
You guys in LA are kind of in that weird mix where you need, like, you got to answer the quarterback question for the future, because, look, LA, I am impressed by what they've been able to do this year with such a young roster and just finding those nuggets of gold late in the draft. And then there's the little red bird in the desert, which I don't know what way they're going to go. If it were up to me, you keep Kyler Murray, because it's a disgusting dead cap hit if you release him. So with Seattle for now, if being a wild card team every year can be successful, or if you guys can win out, which, look, you guys have one of the more exciting games in the 4 o'clock window, because the 4 o'clock window this week is disgusting. It's you guys against Pittsburgh, Denver, LA, and Cincinnati, KC, which was a promising matchup 7 months ago, but now it's like the 1 o'clock window is good. You got Buffalo, New England. You got Miami and Baltimore. There's a couple other games that I'm blanking on hard right now. But you have a lot more games in that window with playoff implications. Meanwhile, your game was the only game at the 4 o'clock window with real playoff implications. I only say that because, look, Kansas City, we all know they're going to win their division. They finished playing Jake Browning and Easton Stick. If they can't beat either one of those quarterbacks, there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But that's just my take on Seattle, where fix the quarterback situation, and I think everything will fall into place. And also, I'll say this to you guys losing. Also, to Shane Waldron, where do you guys stand on him right now?
I'm ready for him to go. I'm ready for him to go. Seahawks Twitter is not too far behind me. You know, we were promised this guy that was going to bring, you know, innovative play calling from LA, and I just haven't seen a lot. Could I see him being back next year? I could, but I wouldn't be happy about it. Now, you pretty much said everything that Seahawks Twitter and Seahawks fans like myself, you hit the nail on the head. We've got a good team. I'm not going to sit here and say we have a great team. We have a very good team. Yeah. It's the quarterback position. I love Geno. I love the story, but I just don't think you can hoist a Super Bowl trophy. Drew Lock, okay, that game against the Eagles was fun, but let's be honest, you take away the last 2 minutes of that game, it was a Drew Lock game. It was very, okay. We have a very good team. I really do. I think we have a good team. We're nowhere near San Francisco is, and I hate saying that because I really don't like San Francisco. They're so stinking good. They have weapons all across the board. But at the same time, though, I feel like we do too. Metcalf, Lockett, Smith and Jigba, Noah Fant, you know, tight end right there. You know, Will Disley and Parkinson, like you said, yeah, you know, they could be better. Yeah. Ken Walker, we got a nice rookie in Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA. We haven't even played the dude, our rookie running back from Georgia, McIntosh. We haven't even played him yet. Defensive side of the ball, I think there's a couple things that need to be tweaked there. Our defense, kind of like the Huskies, our defense can show up when it needs to. But on a whole, our defense is just middle of the pack for those, you know, games that, you know, we should be fine in. When I say we should be fine, like, why are they giving up a touchdown? Like the Tennessee game, the defense did well, but they gave up that touchdown with about 4 or 3.5 minutes to go. And it's like, really, you guys, are you kidding me against Ryan Tannehill? Because I didn't really think that Geno was going to do what he did and come back. So our defense has the potential. I'm done with Jamal Adams. When he tweeted at that reporter about his wife, I was done there. When he covered Ferguson, and I say covered in huge air quotes against Ferguson of the Cowboys, I was done there. The dude is just a big crybaby talker. I'm done with him. Bobby Wagner has been such a nice surprise in terms of coming back and playing well. You know he's lost a step, though. He's totally lost a step. Devin Witherspoon, oh my goodness, the more that kid plays over the course of his years, wow, what a story he's going to be. We just need to continue to finding guys to sack the quarterback. We got Draymond Jones. We got Leonard Williams. We got Jaron Reed. We lost in Chenna Nwosu, which is why we brought in Leonard Williams. I think Pete and John, those guys have done really well with the defensive line, but man, we're still needing just one more difference maker. And then I really think that this defense can be something great.
That's just the thing. It's just like you're at the precipice where it's like good, not great. And that's where you don't want to be in the NFL. Because in my opinion, you either want to be at top of the mountain, like where San Francisco is, or you want to be where my New England Patriots are, at the bottom of the mountain, where it's, you retool and reshape. But teams in your situation, it's different because it's not like, how do I say it? It's not like a New Orleans, you know, where it's like you're fake good. It's, we know, it's like the thing, how do I say this? It's the dumb student that you know has untapped potential. It's the, you're making mistakes you shouldn't be making. It's the week in and week out, we expect you to do good, but you don't. So it's that just weird little dynamic. Meanwhile, with you guys, it's what I just said. It's the go out there and prove people wrong dynamic. It's the go out there and win games. It's not the get swept by the LA Rams. It's not the only, or go 1-4 in divisional play this year, potentially probably 2-4 in divisional play, because I think in order to have a successful season, you got to win at least 3 divisional games. If you can split divisionally 3-3, it's fine. Anything worse is just, it's a massive red flag of accomplishment for any NFL team. So that's where I stand with your team, where it's, hey, a couple quick fixes and you're kind of back to normal. It's not just do a couple things and then you're back. It's like a couple things and it's like, hey, it can go south. No, I think it's, you can kind of stand there and toe-to-toe with the best of them. It's just for next year, I'm already intrigued by next year because there's a couple of teams that are middle of the pack that I can see being very competitive next year. So that's the thing. It's just, it's all about keeping up with the competition at this point.
And I'm not going to be this guy. In fact, I really hate being this guy. But the NFL, it just comes down to one or two plays. I really think that if Geno Smith against Cincinnati can just find a way, we're what, 5-10 some odd yards away from getting a touchdown, we beat Cincinnati. If the referees don't go stir flag crazy with penalties that Dallas game, we probably win that game. If Geno doesn't get hurt against the Rams in LA and Drew Lock has to come in. And I'm not going to dog Jason Myers for missing that, what was it, 57, 58 yard field goal. I'm not going to dog him on that. That's a tough kick. I don't care. 58, that's tough. 57, whatever it was. We were 3. And even that San Francisco game, I mean, well, not the first one on Thanksgiving, but the second one, if just a couple more things go our way, we're right in there in the thick of things at top of the NFC West. But that's the belly of the beast. That's NFL for you. But man, the Hawks this year, they have just been inches away on so many plays and possessions and games. And it's just, we could be there. But that's why I really think if we take care of Pittsburgh, we take care of Arizona, I'd really not like to play San Francisco like how last year we had to play them their first game in the wild card round. We beat Detroit. We hung right in there with Dallas. We beat Philadelphia, albeit in Seattle. I'm not too concerned about Tampa Bay. Now that I just said that, you know, something will happen down the line. I think we can beat, other than San Francisco, I'm ready to fall on that sword. I think we can beat any team in the playoffs right now. It is a bummer, though, like you said, though, man. You can't go 1-4 in your division. Sean McVay, Pete, I love you. Sean McVay knows how to beat Pete Carroll. And Shanahan with the 49ers, they're just on another wavelength for us. But I tell you, you knock off Steelers, you knock off Arizona, that's a 4-game winning streak you're riding into the playoffs. And those teams that are in the playoffs as we speak, we've hung in there toe-to-toe with them. So anything's possible.
It's like this weird revolving cycle of how Kyle Shanahan knows how to beat McVay. McVay knows how to beat Carroll, but everyone knows how to beat the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Pete Carroll knows how to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know what's – I didn't realize that until, like, the week of that game. I didn't realize how successful you guys were against them. So, kudos to you on that. But, yeah, because that's the thing. Like, when I look at you guys with Detroit – and also, too, I know you're going to hate me for saying this, but I want the Detroit Rams matchup in the playoffs for Matt Stafford to go back to Detroit and fair. Either lose or – just rip their fucking hearts out, because that's what one of the two things that would happen is. And then with a game like Philadelphia, yesterday did not give me any confidence that they're back to being what we thought they were. I think they remind me a lot of the – do you remember the 2020 Pittsburgh Steelers?
The COVID years? Yeah.
They went undefeated, and then they lost to Washington, and then the cracks started to show. I feel like after the San Francisco game, the cracks really started to show. So for them, like even this weekend, I'm looking at some of the early spreads and they're like a 13.5-point favorite against Arizona. I know it's Arizona, but like I look at that and I'm just like, you guys were the same against the Giants and Tyrod Taylor nearly beat you if it weren't for bad clock management. So because that's the thing with Philly too. Philly's been getting away with a lot to where it's kind of a lot of NFL teams are having this, you know, where it's like the clock striking midnight on them. Meanwhile, you get a team like Buffalo where, look, they're getting hot at the exact right time. They went in and they beat Kansas City. They went in and, you know, they handled Dallas. Because that's the other thing, too, I'll say with Dallas. Dallas is going to win a playoff game or they're going to lose. Just whenever it happens, Dallas is going to lose and it's going to be hilarious. I also didn't realize until today that, did you know that before 2016, Dallas hadn't won a playoff game in 20 years? I completely blanked on that.
Jeez. Oof, no.
Don't feel bad for them. It's the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I know. But still, man, that's just a statistic that just – I'm even scratching my head. Like, is that – that's real. That's totally real.
It's totally real. But then, like, going back to the point of the whole – your conference, because when you look at the conference as a whole, like, I still think San Francisco is going to get the bye. Like I said, they're going to rebound. They have the teams they have to beat. But then right now what I'm looking at – actually, playoff pitcher. So if it were to end today, you guys would go to Philly, the Rams would go to Detroit, and the Cowboys would go to the Buccaneers. I don't know if it were to happen, but you could easily see a world where two road teams win the NFC playoffs. I think it's that wide open.
Absolutely. And again, having a healthy Geno and healthy Devin Witherspoon, and I know you're going to Philly. We've hung with Philly tough, man. You know, even with Drew Lock as our quarterback. And yes, I was at that game. The 12th man definitely knows how to pump crowd noise in there, no doubt about it. But we can hang with them, no doubt about it.
But on the road, you're going to have to rely on – there's one guy I've seen on Twitter, Captain Seahawk.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, he just goes. And I love diehard football fans. I could never do it. I'm like, I consider myself a diehard fan. I think you consider yourself a diehard, like, a diehard Seattle sports guy. But yeah. I don't know if I could travel for football to every single road game. That's just like, whew, you gotta have a good job to get away with that.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not looking to go into that much credit card debt. No, I'll be happily watching from my house.
So, per Football Database, by the way, I'm just looking this up right now. The last time that the Philadelphia Eagles defeated the Seattle Seahawks was November 2nd of, I'm going to let you guess the year.
Sweet. Good Lord. Well, I was born in 94. Let's go with 94 just for kicks.
A little bit sooner than that, it was a 26-7 win on November the 2nd of 2008. So it has been almost six. Okay. Think about this. To age you and age me, who's now, this is my first podcast, by the way, folks, since turning 30.
Hey.
The fact that the last time they beat them, I was in the 10th grade. So it has been 15 years since that. So let's put that into perspective. Because every game since, Seattle has won 31-14, 24-14, 26-15, 24-10, including a wild card win in Philadelphia not even 5 years ago. That playoff, I'm trying to remember what happened to you guys in the next round of the playoffs. I think you lost to, did you lose to Green Bay that year, 2020?
Yeah, we I know for a fact we have not made it past a divisional playoff game since that 2014 Miracle Packers game. I know for a certain fact we have not made it past the divisional round since then.
I'm trying to remember 2020, because I remember that was San Francisco against Green Bay in the NFC Championship game that year. I remember that was the playoff. I remember. I think, yeah, no, another thing about it, I think you guys lost to Green Bay. You went to Green Bay and lost because you guys went to Green Bay because then I believe it was Minnesota went to San Francisco and lost in the playoffs that year. So that's what happened there. But I know that too, because that was, for a while, that was my knock on the Seahawks, was the fact that they hadn't gotten back to a conference championship since then. And there's a multiverse out there where the ball gets run, which I don't like going down for obvious reasons because my team was victorious, which I have little to cheer about nowadays, okay? I have 4 wins to my merit this year. Thank you very much.
Well, good job of beating Russell yesterday. Woohoo!
Yes. I take pride in that, not because I don't like Russ. It's because I've just... Do you have a team out there that you don't like? You don't say why, you don't like them. You know how certain people in this world, like, you realize you don't like them. It's just something about them gives off a weird vibe.
Well, if we take away Oregon and San Francisco for obvious reasons. God, you know, there's not necessarily, I think maybe the closest would be the Steelers, and not even because of that Super Bowl way back when. I just think their fans are just a bunch of, they're just so gross. Maybe the Steelers.
See, I have 2, and 1 is Super Bowl related. For me, it's the New York Giants, and also mixed 2 of their fans still believing in Daniel Jones. But the other one is the Denver Broncos. There's just something about them. I've never been a fan. So to beat the Denver Broncos, especially in Denver, in a game they had the must win, and watching their fans comment on their Twitter feeds, you ruined my Christmas. Which, for one, if a football game result is ruining a holiday for you, seek help. But the fact that you're seeing people tweet that, you kind of makes your Grinch heart grow a couple sizes.
I know. I'm not a big fan of when people say, oh, it's just a game. Well, I invested 3+ hours of my energy into that. But I do know it's not going to ruin any holiday. Yeah. It's not going to ruin anything like that. But, I totally feel you on that.
Yeah, like I get emotionally invested with every football game. But at the end of the day, I know, like, I'm never going to be break something or ruin a TV or, how do I even say this, fight a fan mad. I'm going to be just, you know, you're disappointed. You take one off you take it off the chin and you move on and know that what they did on the field doesn't impact your day-to-day life and you move past it.
That's right. Because then there's always next week or next season or next year. And that's the best part about being a sports fan. You know what? You can be pissed as all heck. Let it ruin your day if you want, but it's the faithful ones that always come back next week, next year. They're your team. I am always going to love Seattle sports, and Even that pesky Mariners team that just doesn't seem to know what the heck they're doing. I will continue to go to games and support them. So that's what being sports fans all about.
Which I'll say this as well, because I was saying this to my fiance earlier today in the car, because of the Patriots in their last two games, I'm in a win-win situation, because either they win some games and hey, you get to celebrate victories, because victory, there's nothing like a victory Monday in the NFL.
Yeah.
Or they lose and they just continue their draft position. They keep a top five pick. So it's kind of in that like win-win scenario in these last couple weeks against the Bills and the Jets. So I just wanted to point that out. And then one other question I have for you, and we're going off the football merit for a second, because you've talked so much about all the Seattle teams you liked. But where do you stand on the team with the creepy mascot and the Kraken?
Bowie. That's our boy Bowie up here.
Yeah.
I don't really know what they're doing with Bowie. That's kind of a weird one. I just go with it. Kraken are really struggling this year. Last year they seemed to really put it on, and they started off slow last year and they made a really, really nice push. Shoot, beat Colorado in the playoffs last year and just so close against Dallas, couldn't hold on. You know, they just didn't do much in the offseason. They got that guy Yamamoto. Note, everybody, I have only been watching hockey now. This is my third year watching hockey, so I'm still not quite up to par with all the players yet, but I know icing. I know why you get penalties and all that stuff. But yeah, Kraken are starting off slow. I'm hoping that they do what they did last year and they just seem to pick it up as the season goes on. It sucks that the Vegas Golden Knights are in our division because they just seem like they're always really stinking good. But, you know, they're still a young franchise, third year. I know everyone's saying, oh, well, Vegas. Yeah, well, we're not Vegas. We're Seattle. Totally different. So do I have faith that they can finally pick it up and get into the playoffs? Well, of course I do, not being biased because we saw it last year. I like our coach. I like Hackstall. You know, I think some of our guys are really, really solid dudes. But I just need to see a couple more years of Kraken hockey before I can make any judgments of where we're going, because first year was absolute crap. Second year started off bad, finished good. This year I'm hoping we do what we did last year. So yeah, Bowie though will keep you up. That is nightmare fuel, no doubt about it.
So my thing with the Kraken is, and also say this quickly too for the non-football, non-hockey people here about Vegas. So Vegas was in the same situation, expansion team, go to the cup final in their first year, and they just did not let their foot off the gas. They just kept going at it and going at it and going at it, making conference finals, firing coaches because they were underachieving just a little bit. And then last year, they did what no one thought they would do, and they won a cup in their first 6 years of existence. Meanwhile, with Seattle, it's a bit of a slower process because the first year didn't go to plan. Last year, you guys caught lightning in a bottle in the second half of the season, made the playoffs, nearly went to the Western Conference Finals last year. And now it's kind of a comeback-to-earth moment, but there are some nice pieces there that I like Matty Berniers, like Jared McCann, a couple solid pieces there as well. But it's just, you got to build that cohesion. So it's going to take some time, because that's the thing with hockey, where you've got all these other good teams in your division. You've got Vegas. You've got the LA Kings are in there. The Vancouver Canucks have been really good this year. Edmonton's struggling, but they'll be there. San Jose is bad. Anaheim is bad. So give it some time, but stick with the hockey stuff, because that's my one true love. And for any UW fans out there looking for a little stress reliever Monday afternoon, before shit hits the fan, the Winter Classic's in Seattle this year at T-Mobile Park with the Vegas Golden Knights taking on the Seattle Kraken. So if you want a little, you know, just take your mind off football instead of watching Iowa versus Tennessee or Oregon versus Liberty, watch your Kraken take on the Golden Knights.
Yes, and as bad as I wanted to go to that, I just didn't make it happen, but I will be watching for sure. And boy, win or lose that game, Kraken. Page is being flipped. Go Dogs. And yeah, I don't know what your target audience is. I don't know if you're more East. I'm sure you're very popular. You're all over the map here, but everybody, West Coast is the best coast. Now that's just me being biased, but seriously, Seattle fans are so fun. We are a very nice group of people up here. We're proud of our you know, historically kind of above average, mediocre teams here. I'm just so proud to have been born and raised in this area. Loved seeing what I saw from my Dogs this year. Loved seeing everything in the Pete Carroll era. Mariners, well, you did good, not this last year, but the year before. We're going to get our Sonics back. I might be 40 years old when it happens, but we're going to get them back. I don't know, man. Come on and visit Seattle. Go to Pike Place. Throw some fish. Put some gum on the gum wall. It's a good time up here. We're an interesting bunch.
But folks, with that, I don't know if I told you what the episode number is for today, but this has been episode number 269, now in the bag. Hey. Think about that. Alex was first on in the very early days, in the Skype days, because he even asked me, do you still do Skype? And I'm like, no. I haven't recorded on Skype in like about a couple years because I was doing StreamYard for a while. And then the company I work for, Cryer Media, they let me use this wonderful platform called Restream, which gives us these wonderful Christmas graphics. If you're wondering, oh, why is the font in cursive? Because they still have the holiday format to their name. But anyway, guys, from Alex and I, we thank you for listening to this full Week 17 preview coming up this Thursday night. Stay tuned for that. But with that, guys, take care. And I'll let Alex end it with a famous... You gonna say?
Well, there's a couple things I can say. Go Dogs, go Hawks. But for you old school fans, Edge is the best one TV. A. Larson, 12th man, signing out.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.